black guys on white movies to talk. Gladiator 2, the Ridley Scott epic starring, just starring Denzel Washington and a bunch of other dudes are in it.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
This is about Denzel. A note about the pod, I was finally able to start a separate YouTube page for Black Eyes on White Movies. So all new content will be on that page. I just kind of didn't want to create a whole Google thing, and maybe it did, but I found a way to do it from my YouTube page just by clicking one button.
Okay.
And maybe that's new, maybe it's not. Maybe I'm not as savvy as I want to be all the time. Either way, you can now just go to YouTube, Black Eyes on White Movies, for the videos of these podcast episodes.
That was intense.
Yeah.
It started off informative and it ended up very intense.
People got to know. They got to get there right now and subscribe. Subscribe, like the video, talk in the comments. That's where we can really have discussions about it because I don't know how to use Discord really. And there's other apps and things, but we could also just talk right in the comment section. Your thoughts and
Absolutely.
opinions on these movies, the whiteness of these movies, the lack of this or that, whatever. And since we did Gladiator not too long ago, and Bernard is
Yeah.
a Roman history connoisseur,
Kind of, yeah, for sure.
we wanted to do Gladiator 2 when it came out. So we went out and saw it, and we have thoughts. We have lots of thoughts and opinions,
Okay.
and I have general history questions. We can get into like who these people were in real life or who they
Sure.
represent maybe.
Yeah.
And also this is great because now this is officially a franchise and I love to talk franchises.
Oh yeah,
But we
this
can
is
get
now a
into
franchise
like
talk.
this is now also a franchise talk. So we
The
can talk
covert
about
franchise talk.
how this worked as a sequel. And right off the bat, before we even get into general opinions,
Yo.
terrible title. Terrible title.
Yeah.
Gladiator 2? Okay.
Right.
Why isn't this Gladiator the return of son of
Yeah.
something?
Something.
A 2 is like Iron Man 2. That works. The
Yeah.
Batman 2. That works, you know. Gladiator, this is like an epic historical. It's not even the same character. You gotta have
Right.
like the return of the gladiator or revenge of the fallen or any
Yeah.
number of fun title like that.
It definitely, I felt, especially, I kind of felt that even in the advertising campaign, like when the trailer and everything came out, but
Yeah.
definitely watching it in the theater and like when the title screen came up and said Gladiator 2, like I was like, this title doesn't match like the epicness of like the music and the everything that they're trying to sell me on the movie, right? I feel like it
Right.
should have a subtitle to kind of like really build that out and build out expectations, because I don't know that those were, I don't know. I don't know that this film delivers on all his expectations, but anyways, we'll talk about
It's
that.
tough. It's tough to do a sequel 20 years later,
It really is.
bruh. Like, because then the expectations, and the first Gladiator is an Oscar-winning movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big
Usually,
one.
when we're talking franchises, we're not talking Oscar-winning franchises.
Right.
It's like superhero movies, or it's even cartoons, or just fun cult movies, comedies even. But like, it's rarely a prestige movie. And this was at a time in the history of movies, like
Yeah, I mean it's
a
historical.
historical epic has long been a prestige movie before it kind of veered into more being action movies or being more, you know, I think Thor was like the one that was like, hey, these can just be fun action movies. They don't have to be too serious.
Yeah.
Wait, what did I call it? I said Thor. I meant to say
You did say
Troy.
Thor.
Did
I
I
was
say
gonna
Troy?
go.
Yeah, I meant to say
Oh,
Troy.
you said Thor, but I was rolling with it. But yeah, Troy for sure.
Yeah, I feel like we connected that it was Troy, even though I said Thor.
For sure. And there's a
But
definitely Thor borrows some Troy.
oh, 100%. That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, the first two Thors are very Troy-esque.
For sure.
But that was like kind of like the Hollywood historical epic. And Gladiator was like the last maybe of the Oscar prestige bait historical epics.
Yeah, and also like it was a thing that like there hadn't really been a big historical epic in like probably solid 20 years before that, right? It
In
was
a
like
long time.
a reintroduction of like that prestige genre from, the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Exactly.
You know what I
Which
mean?
is funny because we had moved towards American historical epics in the 90s, right? Like Last of the Mohicans kind of stuff and Dances with Wolves
Glory.
and Glory, Ragtime, a lot of these movies.
For
Even
sure.
like modern, like A Time to Kill or Mississippi Burning, which were like set in, I think, like the 60s, kind of started the real era of kind of civil rights as an American historical epic.
Definitely.
And then
Definitely.
Gladiator comes, knocks it out the park, and this Gladiator 2 had been in the works since
Forever.
it was discussed as early as 2001. So
Sure.
since right after the first one, like the first one was successful and they were like, we could do this again,
Yeah,
but it took them
basically.
20 years, 24 years.
Yeah, basically, if they started talking about it in 2001 back then, that means they probably got final count on that box o global box office, and they were like, it took a few months back then. You know what I mean?
Right, right. They
They
wanted to make
had
sure. They were
to make
like,
sure, and they're like, all right, let's schedule a meeting.
now what they do is they plan the sequel, and then if the movie doesn't hit, they just send everybody home. They ghost everybody.
Right.
Back then, they sat pins and needles till the second weekend, and they were like, "It's a hit. Okay, let's round up the cavalry. Let's get them back in the room."
Yeah, it did take 24 years. I remember, there's been a lot of talk about, I think this on the internet, but I remember there being like a definitely like a version that was kind of like a spiritual Maximus Returns from Beyond the Grave version, and there'd been a number of different versions, so interesting the one that we got.
Okay. All right. Let's get into like what did you think? Our opinions of this movie, just general opinions as we get into it more in depth.
Yeah, I can't say that I enjoyed it. I did find it entertaining. Really enjoyed Denzel. He's great. I mean, he's just having a blast, and
And like,
it's great to see.
you can't tell me in this one, you can't be like, oh, Denzel plays the same character. Like he was a distinctly different
Oh
Denzel in
yeah.
this movie than a lot of other Denzel, when he's just like a cop or something, you know?
Oh yeah, that stood out to me definitely, because I feel like before the movie, people were I kept hearing a lot of that, right? It's just Denzel. Why is Denzel the only one with an American accent? Blah blah blah, all these sort of things. But it was like, nah, he wasn't just doing his Denzel, my man sort of thing. Like this was a,
Right.
I mean, Denzel's personality is going to shine through. That's why you hire a specific
That's
actor.
why there are stars. That's why there are stars. Their charisma, we want that in the movie. Just maybe a different, slightly different shade, but we always want them. That's what a movie star is.
You want Tom Hanks to be Tom Hanks, even when he's this vastly different Tom Hanks, right? Like, that's what you want. So anyways, I thought that was really great. He plays another incredible villain. He's got a few of these in his career.
Oh, we will talk about that. Why does Denzel only get recognition, a certain kind of specific recognition from certain people when he's a villain?
You know what's really interesting about that is that like everybody, a lot of people like talk about his role in Training Day, right? As like the kind of the comparing this character to that character, and it's like actually his role in Training Day was the last time that he, I think the last time that he got that Oscar, and that was the year after He had had the Oscar stolen from him, in my opinion, by Russell Crowe in Gladiator. He
For
should
what?
have won for he should have run won for The Hurricane, the
Hurricane,
Reuben.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it, like, even his first Oscar was in Glory, right?
I think it's
As
Glory.
also supporting, but he was the antagonist
Absolutely.
to the other black characters for most of the movie. He had a
Yeah.
heroic turn at the end. He shed that single tear. But he was the antagonist. He was calling them names. He was like starting trouble in the camps.
Yeah, I always forget about that piece of it from
You
like in a
know?
connection to the like villainous or antagonist piece. Yeah.
So it's
There's
America,
something
man.
there.
It's
There's
America.
something there.
Will Gambino say, "This is America"?
Yeah, I mean, long story short, entertaining, especially in parts. I think there's some really great scenes. I think there's some really great sequences. I also feel like there was a number of different movies in this movie, and we can talk about
Right.
that or not. But yeah, that
Yeah.
was those were the impressions I came away with.
I pretty much feel the same. I think I might have even enjoyed the entertainment a little more than you because I didn't have anything, a lot
Yeah.
of prior knowledge or like much care about the time.
Yeah.
But I'll say this because you mentioned people talking about why is Denzel the only one with an American accent? Why do they have British accents?
Exactly.
This isn't Britain in the 1700s. This is ancient Rome, dog.
Right. And the thing
And a
about
lot of
this
these people like
is
North Africans and Mediterranean, like they're why would anybody have British accent?
exactly,
Especially a
nobody
modern
would.
British accent, like the British accents that we recognize. Nobody
Right.
would talk like that back then. That didn't exist even.
Right, if they would have sounded like Germans.
Yeah.
Right. But no, it's crazy, man. Like I think about it in the sense that like Denzel throughout his career has done a bunch of Shakespeare too. And like
A
I
bunch.
felt like this is like when I was hearing his like, you know, his cadence and like the way he was like performing this character of Macrina is like that was like, oh, that's Much Ado About Nothing, Denzel. Like I remember that Denzel, you know what I mean? Like this is that Denzel, you know what I mean? He wasn't just doing
Yeah.
it like a New York accent. He has a New York accent. It's going to shine through, just like Russell Crowe had an Australian accent in The Gladiator, you know what I mean?
Right.
So
So yeah,
anyways.
like I said, I enjoyed the movie. I definitely agree. This was a couple different movies at a few different times,
Had a few different
and
times.
I still
Yeah.
found it overall entertaining. The only thing I didn't like in the sense of as a movie watcher, like
Yeah.
within the story, like, oh, why did he do that? You know? And like when they killed Pedro Pascal, I was like, well, that took a lot of the air out of the movie. That felt like maybe like the
I
main
agree.
conflict. And I know they made it like a Denzel's character versus his ambitions versus what the gladiator was doing and this kind of manipulation thing, but killing Pedro kind of, I think I dozed off for like 5 minutes somewhere after that happened too, until the end, to be honest.
I believe,
But
no, I
I
believe.
really get a t I really get a timeout, you know. I'm still in like first year baby world, so like I get time out, I might doze off.
Oh,
That's gonna
man.
happen. Sleep
We're
is
in our
at a
40s. It's
premium.
going to
Sleep is at a
happen.
premium. And women didn't have really any role in this movie.
Not at all.
And but also it's important to remember that this
In
movie
fact, the
was
only.
affected by the strike.
Oh, yeah.
The actors, it was shooting, then actors also went on strike with writers. Well, not with
Right.
writers, but separately at the same time as writers, and there was a unity there. So this movie was halted for 5 months. So I 100%, you come back from 5 months and you have this kind of budget, this big a movie, you have a freedom to start to make changes or different decisions. And I think it's almost unavoidable that a movie of this size is gonna like take on a different shape in that circumstance.
Yeah, you know, even that strikes me as like really interesting, right? Because I think about during that a lot of these past couple years, how much Pedro Pascal's been working, and that's like that could even be like you come back after 5 months and like, is Pedro Pascal still available?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like,
Now we
oh,
got
he's
to
got,
literally
yeah, he's,
shift the story.
yeah. We only
So
have him for, seven more days. He was scheduled for 20.
Right.
We gotta change the story, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. Yeah, for sure. I definitely felt that same, like that shift from Pascal as kind of the main antagonistic force to Denzel's character, McCreanest, being the main antagonist force. It was an awkward handoff. It was a bit of an awkward handoff. Yeah, for sure. I was like,
Very
either
abrupt.
these movies would really be interesting on their own.
Let's talk about some of the movie things real quick, like
Yeah.
filmmaking, and then I want to ask questions about what this was supposed to be. So, the CGI monkeys or whatever, awful.
Awful.
Awful, bruh.
It
They should have.
struck me. I was just going to say, it struck me so much because we just watched Gladiator 1 recently, and that tiger scene works so well, even though it's clearly special effects.
Right.
Right? But like with these CGI monkeys, there was no sense of threat in any of that. They looked.
They look like early CGI, like previz.
Oh yeah, and there's like, and like the only two of the baboons that interact with the main actors are both hairless, right? They're both these
Right.
bald baboons. And I truly believe that was because they did not have the time to render out the hair interactions with like the actors' hands that close to camera.
Yeah.
They're the
So
only two that have no hair.
I give that yeah, I give that part F minus. It was the worst.
It's
That
definitely
should not
F.
even have really been allowed. They should have reshot that and just put people in monkey suits, like some Planet of the Apes
Yeah.
stuff. Or even just reshot it and have like these are the humans that we've starved and they act like animals and that's who he has to fight, because that was awful and embarrassing. Actually, you know, usually like people laugh when something's really bad in a movie like that, especially the
Yeah.
CGI. I feel like everybody was just a little embarrassed and was kind of like, oh, wow, because they couldn't afford it or something, you know? I don't
Yeah,
know.
it felt rough. It felt rough.
And then there was a lot of, one, there was a lot of battles. Like the first one didn't have this many battles. He was always fighting, which is usually a sign in like a sports movie that not a great sign. There's too
Yeah.
many games, you know? I
Right.
say that, but like, remember the Titans? They show almost every game of the season, but some of them are only like one scene long. And a couple of the games, it's just like, I guess we won that one. You know, they don't show them, they just in a uniform walk off the
Right.
field like, we won that one, but we played like crap, you know?
Yeah, they cut right to the locker room, right?
Yeah, cut to the locker room, from the field to the locker room, and that was the game. But this one, he did a lot of fighting, and when there's a lot of fighting, where I've spent a lot of time with the Emperor and Denzel and
Yeah.
the mom on close-ups of their reactions. We spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was kind of watching, it was boring. That part is like boring. And I get
Yeah.
like Denzel's watching their reaction and she realizes it's her son, she's more into it and he's watching her, and but he's really the only one watching people.
Right.
The two emperors are so like, you know, gluttonous for action. They're so like over the top. They're just watching
So,
the fight and like getting off, you know, basically.
yeah.
And once
Yeah.
she knows it's her son, she's just like, what is going to happen? Don't hurt my son, you know, so
Yeah.
there's no sense of intrigue in there other than Denzel being like, ah, I noticed something about you. And it's like, okay. There's a lot of time on the camera there. Almost as much as I'm spending talking about it. You know, it's just drowns, goes on and on.
Yeah, no, there was something about, I'm glad you said that because there was definitely something that struck me just from, again, some of these writing aspects. And I get, you know, knowing the whole strike piece of it gives me a lot of empathy for the creative team here. But like there was so much that, oh, I'm blanking on the actress who plays the mother. But there was so much that
Connie.
Connie Nielsen. Yeah, there was so much that Connie Nielsen's character like did that that character had to do in order to make the plot move forward, have this like outsized reaction in front of everybody. But it's like also that you're telling me this is the character who's survived this political battlefield for 30 years. You know what I mean? And has all these like and is leading this inner rebellion of spies, and like yet so easily betrays herself time and time again in the script or in the course of the film. That was a little bit of a rough sit, like just at, paying attention to character and everything.
Yeah, it was like, does she have any savvy at all? No.
You know what I mean?
She lost it all. And then you kind of justify it. You're like, well, she's seen her son for the first time 30 years or whatever, and that's like the explanation, but it just wasn't maybe the most choice that I don't want to say the best or worst choice, but the choice that like engaged me the most.
I think filmmaking choice that I very much question. Reintroducing Derek Jacobi's character from the first movie, only to kind of have him killed like in the corner of a scene while other characters are being killed, and it's like a chaotic fight. I thought that was such a interesting choice to bring that character back,
Oh,
only to like the like old senator. Who was like from the first one? Like, I thought that was such an interesting. Just the fact that that character got killed in the background, it was like, why was he important enough to bring back? He didn't even give him a death scene. I
I mean, hey, who
don't know.
knows? Who knows? Yeah, like, yeah. Even if the thing is saying, like, oh, passage of time, he held his spot. But he doesn't have any power now. Still, to like to bring him back, you would think we would see him get killed still, you know what I mean? And he would say a line like, "This is no country for old men." And then wink at the camera. And then Coen Brothers movie, remember that? Anyway. And then there's also just like, and I understand from what I've been reading about Ridley Scott, especially at this age, and he's always been prolific, but he's very much like, I'm shooting. I'm always shooting. Got to be shooting movies. You know, I'm not even thinking about the last one. I'm on to the next one. We're shooting. And people are like, he uses, you know, four or five cameras. He's just shooting, getting footage. So I get his mentality and his work ethic. And it's impressive at any age, especially at his age. But this movie lacked that really epic feel. You know, it did feel like, it felt like that. Felt like we're shooting this movie, we're getting the shots up, you know, close up, close, you know, medium shot, close up, next scene, you know, the fight scene, we're getting in close, we're shooting it. And it just didn't have, you could almost feel a lack of like patience with it, which I think if you're a millennial or older, you just come to expect from a movie, a historical movie like this. And maybe younger people don't really care or notice, you know, but I think if you grew up with that, you just kind of expect that. So maybe it just broke through a trope there, but also you're dealing like with they're fighting in the Colosseum, and there's an epicness to that in the scale of history that you kind of want to feel conveyed through the movie.
And I do think that's one of the things that this movie does really well, that the first one did really well too, which is like just giving you those wide shots of like the Colosseum or these ancient cities that give you that allow us to get a glimpse of like the fact that, yeah, these were big cities with a lot of people and they existed. They looked different. They had these things, right? And I think they do a really good job of like showing, at least from filmically, that grandeur of like this.
I didn't really feel that in this one. I guess that's what I was saying.
I feel like it was, oh, okay. I feel like there were a couple parts for me that were there. Like I did, even though I kind of didn't love the construction of the scene, I did like really enjoy seeing the naval battle in the Colosseum. That's a real
Oh,
thing that
yeah.
happened quite a
Well,
bit.
I think that the first one even had like, and they were with, we were with Maximus or whatever the whole movie, But it still felt like, oh, at this point we're in like the market, and at this point we're in like you could get a feel of everyday life even too. This one I felt like that was pretty much absent. It was all just about the battle, the battles, battle after battle. But that battle specifically was actually a really impressive spectacle.
Yes, from spectacle piece, like to actually see that. And then, like, the historical nerd in me, I think I thought it was kind of cool when they showed the like Lucius, the main character, when he's like they're coming into the port of Rome, Ostia, and like it's mentioned in the first movie, right? Like, I have my men stationed at Ostia, but like very rarely do we see Ostia, like the port of Rome, even though this is an incredibly important part, this incredibly important city that's like a sub city of Rome. We never see that on camera or on film because it's not important, right? It's a port city. It's just part of the infrastructure. So as a historical nerd, I just thought that that was kind of cool to see like one of these aspects of that world that we don't see, right? A blue collar city.
So, what is this story? Let me ask that, because that's what I'm very unsure about.
So,
Is this even like a real story?
not at all.
Okay. And there you have it. Great episode.
No. So, you mentioned in enjoying it a little bit more because you did not have like the previous knowledge, right? And that was definitely an experience for me. I cannot front, like, I normally try to release that. I don't need everything to be historically accurate. You can't be.
Right.
Things in real life take place over months and years, whereas in movies you need them to happen in succession instantly. You know what I mean? And so like you have to change the story. But I did find myself like there were so many kind of things that were really just so different from history. At some point early on in the film, I had to come to the decision that this is not a historical fiction. It's actually a different genre. It's alternate history, right? Like basically the split point in the timeline is that in this timeline, Marcus Aurelius is killed by his son Commodus, and everything from there on just got wilder and wilder as it went. That was the way I had to justify that for myself, just to kind of quiet that piece of my mind that was like, that's not right, that's not right, that's not right. But yeah, no, not real at all. Macrinus, Denzel's character, there was a character named Macrinus. He did overthrow the Emperor Caracalla, but he wasn't. He was never a slave. He never. He was just a guy who saw an opening. He was like the head of the Praetorian Guard, which would have been like the Emperor's bodyguard, and he saw an opening and he took it.
Interesting. So were there twin emperors, Caracalla and Geta?
There were not twin emperors. Caracalla and Geta are two real people.
They are brothers.
They are brothers. Yep. Geta was a couple years younger than Caracalla, I believe. They were emperors together. That was pretty common, actually. In fact, there's a lot of emperors that they don't really talk about who had co-emperors because they didn't necessarily give them that title. But certainly Marcus Aurelius had a co-emperor. Lucius Verus, who's the fake father of the main character, would have been his co-emperor and his adopted brother. But yeah, Caracalla and Geta, they were the sons of an emperor. They grew up as princes, and they both ruled together
You
until,
know,
yes, Caracalla did kill Geta.
okay, so wow. First thought, the one's name is Marcus Aurelius Antonius, better known by his nickname Caracalla. What does Caracalla mean that it's a nickname?
It's a
Good question.
military cloak. So Caracalla was, if you ever look up a picture of Caracalla, like he looks like a
Well,
big,
he looks like LeBron James. I'm looking at him right now. He looks like LeBron James. He's even got a beard here in the bust of his, this photo of his bust. He looks like LeBron James.
I think it's also important to acknowledge that at that time, the high style of sculpture was to be as close to a real representation of the person as possible. So in later centuries, that changes. Those imperial busts look really kind of abstract, but at that time, that's probably pretty close to what the man looked like.
And the other Gator's name, Publius
Yep.
Septimius Gator. Now, I think we might have dropped the ball losing all the US's from names. I think
Yeah.
it's time to bring that back.
It's a
Bernardius,
so, it's a so, it's a
Aranus,
solid ender.
Covingtonus.
Right.
We need to kind of bring that back.
Wesleyus.
My, if I ever have another kid, I'm adding a US,
You got to.
whatever it is. Yeah. He looks like LeBron. They were brothers. What else was I gonna say?
Their father was African. He was from Libya. He was the Emperor Septimius Severus. Their mother was from Syria. She was from an Arabian royal family that ruled the city of Emesa, which is the modern day city of Homs in Syria. So they were African and Arab. They were not two very. They were not one German and one Scottish actor.
Yeah, who man, so like flamboyant and bratty in the
Yeah.
movie, like those characterizations, and you get like what they're doing. They're making them unlikable. They're making them evil emperors and like impulsive and like not, this is why they aren't fit to rule, right? And why we're supposed to be against them as an audience.
It was very, it struck me, again, I'm not trying to criticize too much, but just honestly, it did strike me very much as, a 90-year-old man's version of what makes someone villainous. Like, they're a little
Yeah.
queer, they're dressing like girls, and they got makeup on. Like, all the big manly men are wearing armor, and they don't wear any of that makeup or have earrings. But you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
it was very gender and sexuality coded, in the like depiction of their like villainy, which struck me as like. Even an older movie trope than from the year 2000, like that's it,
It's
and
interesting.
also it was very much like Commodus, but more so.
I could see it being like an old white man's view of his kids or his grandkids when they're in that rebellious stage in their teens, and they're like, they don't play any sports. They're into this weird music, rave
Yeah.
music or emo music, and they backtalk everything. And if you feel like if you gave them any power, they would just be like impulsive and irrational and
Yeah.
glam on to all the wrong things,
Yeah, especially a old rich guy, right? Like a guy who's like
Yeah,
had
let's
a
go,
family
right.
whose
It,
children and grandchildren have likely grown up pretty well off, you know what I
yeah,
mean?
they're like the spoiled rich kids. So then, okay. Paul Mescal,
No, yeah.
Lucius Verus Aurelius Hanno. Did Maximus? So he's Maximus was Russell Crowe.
Maximus was Russell Crowe.
His father was Marcus Aurelius, who's the name? No, the grandson
No.
of former Emperor Marcus Aurelius and son of Maximus. Within this movie.
Yeah, within this movie. So the mother is the daughter of Marcus Aurelius.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So that's where the Aurelius name comes from.
Yeah. And that's like the most
And Maximus is his father.
recognizable name for me in the whole franchise. Like, I know of
Yeah.
Marcus Aurelius. I don't know of all these other people, like
They
pre-movie.
definitely threw that in there at the end to like be like he calls himself that at the end, and you're like, oh, they're calling back to something that people know.
This is a completely fictional character,
This is a
Lucius.
complete fictional character. Yes. I mean,
Uh-huh.
it's likely that Marcus Aurelius had grandchildren. Actually, we know he had grand it's like he had grandsons. We know he had grandchildren. his he did likely have at least one daughter. It seems like he might have had three daughters. And anyways, point being is we know that he had grandchildren because one of his great granddaughters married a later emperor, about 20 years after Caracalla, actually descended from that
So,
same family.
Pedro Pascal, Mescal and Pascal. Okay. General Acacius, fictional.
As far as I know, fiction.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. So then Lucilla, Lucius's mother, it's fictional, but based on, loosely
We
based on a real person.
don't know his daughter's names, but Lucilla makes sense.
Okay. Geta and Caracalla are real. And everybody else is real or not, they represent or don't represent, they're kind of irrelevant if they're real or not. That's good to know.
So one thing for me, I think I'll say this because this I feel like is a pretty good representation of how I felt as somebody with the historical knowledge that I have watching the film. The film opens on the title card of Numidia 200 AD, right? Numidia is this kingdom. 200 AD is the
So
time.
where is Numidia? Where
Numidia
would it come
is,
in?
let's talk about a kingdom that probably spanned across Western Libya and Eastern Tunisia.
Okay, so we're like in North Africa.
We're in North Africa, exactly. Right? So it says Numidia 200 AD. Then they show like the Numidians, and then they show these Romans on a boat coming across. And then they get to fighting this conquest of this Numidian city. And the best way for me to describe that is it would be as if I opened a modern movie about the war on terror and I said Afghanistan 2024. And then the American soldiers showed up wearing Civil War uniforms and then they proceeded to ha fight a battle from the Revolutionary War. Like Numidia was part of the Roman Empire in 200 BC. There was no rebellious thing. There was no African European colonial conquest narrative that was created in this movie.
Well, great, great.
That
Okay.
was the actual emperor in 200 AD would have been the father of Caracalla and Geta. He himself was Libyan, as I said. He spent much of his imperial reign modernizing and investing in the cities of North Africa. When he died, people remembered in the histories written about him that even his up until his dying day, he always spoke his Latin with a North African accent. He was proud of it. There's no conquest. At this point, those folks are now at the center of power. There's a reason why Caracalla and Geta were North African and Arab, because those were the centers of power in the empire, and the most important families came from there. So it's this like European colonial 18th century narrative that they're playing out. It just it didn't fit.
So now we are at the juncture of the pod where we do the where the title comes into play for the movies. Because first what you're saying is basically, let me write this down so I get the times right. What you're saying is basically like this movie, if you did a World War II movie about a real person and it did well. And then you did a sequel about that person's son and just made up everything about how that person's son single-handedly killed Hitler or won the Korean War. Or you did like a re revolutionary movie and then the next one was like George Washington's secret son who stepped up and
Basically.
led the War of 1812, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
And I was, for those that don't know, George Washington had no kids. George Washington was likely gay, but that's for another time. We could talk about that another time. Read about him and read his letters. The man
The man.
who even his choice of spouse. Nobody, you wouldn't do that if you were in his position back then, marry a divorced widow. Anyway, that's how history is. But so that's like the first interesting thing about this movie. And then second, then not the first interesting, but one interesting thing. And then that it's so American and so American white to be like, what is a hook? What is something that gets people into the story? Well, in the 2000s, in the 90s and before, a lot of times racial things were so coded, like a Planet of the Apes, and the apes represent a racial minority, a general racial minority, if not specifically black people. Or Gladiator, he's like, Russell Crowe's not dark, but he represents like he's a dirty, dark, you know what I mean? He's like a general, but when he becomes a slave, and then there's the black people as slaves, and it's like, and the gladiators like Digimon as a character. That's who he consorts with when he's captured or demoted or whatever it was that happened in that movie. Now in 2024, we just everything is more blatant. So it's like white European actors for this, Denzel represents the racial black side. And we're going to make it known that he's an African, but also
He was a
he's a
slave.
smart African. You know what I mean? But he's like, so it's like a confluence of like, it's
But
like,
also, like, and I really find this kind of interesting. But also, he's a secret slave on a revenge mission the whole time, and he's a villain, and he needs to be taken down, or a secret ex-slave, right? He's been hiding his. It's like
right.
there's
That's the
so much there.
2024 of it. That's the 2024 of it, where it's like, and this is in the wake of, you know, the guy that shot the healthcare CEO, right? And people are basically cheering on that guy because of how corrupt and exploitative the healthcare system is. So in this movie, you have first black guy, former slave. Then he shows that he's capable. Now we're talking like kind of wokeness and DEI. That's like what that's analogous to now. And then we're like, oh, he wants to amass power. So we kind of root for him for a bit. We're like, yeah, we these guys suck. I want Denzel to win. Then he does it thoroughly in a very like the way that any of them would have done it. And that's when we turn on him as an audience. That's when they want us to turn on him as an audience. When he actually amasses power, now he's the bad guy. Now he's the bad guy. And that's like so 2020 to 2024 of a timeline in a movie.
Yeah, totally. It's very interesting, man, because right, like also these movies, both of them do it, but this one even more so, code the Roman Empire as like this like democracy. And like it's there was a whisper that was Rome. It's for the people of Rome. It's like none of these people. Marcus Aurelius was born into an imperial family. He didn't want to return the empire. Caracalla and Geta, all these people, nobody, that wasn't the way it was. You know what I mean? That's not the world that people lived in. The emperor was also a religious, a semi-religious,
You see this
like,
kid back here?
yeah, I do. No,
Crashing into the window. Anyway, trying to keep her off
just
campus.
like a semi-religious icon as well. You know what I mean? It's like this idea is. It's so silly. It's so overtly American. Like, I think
And
about like
like
Spartacus, right? Just real quick, I think
Spartacus?
about Spartacus, the 1950s movie. And that movie is all about like, secret communists and everything. It's super Americanized. And yet it feels so much more subtle than this. You know what I mean?
Oh, it definitely was. Like I said, this movie is America 2020 to 2024. You know, it's like George Floyd, black people getting hired, diversity and inclusion. Oh, but now they're actually taking the job. They actually have the jobs. Now they're the villains. Now we have to take it back from them. And some plucky white guy, you know. who's also of royal blood. Like,
Yeah.
it's not like the main character is previous guy's son, the grandson of Marcus Aurelius. Like,
Yeah.
and you see who took this country back is billionaires, people that were born rich, people that, the same people that started the revolution were people that were, wasn't poor people that started the revolution. It was
Yeah, for sure, right?
the, the aristocracy of
Yeah,
America at
of
the
this
time.
country. Yeah,
So,
for sure. The landowners.
telling the same stories and telling it from the lens of whiteness to say, oh man, actually, even more when I look at like media and how a media company will be like, oh, we exist, and then they have their struggles, or then they use like black programming to become solvent.
Yeah.
Then as soon as they get like popular, they abandon the black programming and just have white programming. And like, that's another metaphor that
Well, I think that's really
you could
interesting
tie
as a
into this
metaphor.
movie.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think that's really interesting as a metaphor to tie into this movie because absolutely, Denzel is in here to save this movie, right? Like
Right,
it's
like behind the scenes, like even the metaphor exists bigger than just the plot of the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Denzel is there to save that movie, and I don't think it's lost on me that Denzel doesn't often do movies like this, but he has a long running collaboration with the Scott brothers.
Right.
So if anybody could get Denzel to star in a Gladiator 2 20 years later.
Well, I think we talked about this too. Like, that's probably how this movie happened.
Yeah.
Is whatever point when he got, like, we really want to do this, really want to make this happen, there was a call placed to Denzel. And it was
Right.
like, will you do it? Will you do it for me? Can you, I got a role for you. It's pretty good. And
Yeah.
Denzel was probably like,
I
can I win an Oscar with this? Or like, how good is it? Like,
Yeah.
what are we talking about? And then not only did Denzel, like, probably crucial to the movie getting made, he was crucial to the marketing. My man was on the press tour. I mean, Denzel does his press, but he was open and laughing and doing all the outlets. Like, he doesn't do it like, I don't remember him doing it like this, even for like Fences, which he loved, He was out there for this
Yeah.
one.
Did Denzel do Hot Ones? That's the
That's
Holy
where they,
Grail.
that's. Maybe he'll do a pre-Oscar Hot Ones, to try to get
The Holy Grail right there.
the last few nominations.
But yeah, no, absolutely. Like this movie is structured, built around Denzel's performance. It's advertised around who he is. I mean, there's a reason why they put him doing his characteristic laugh in the trailer.
And
Ha ha!
like
Like,
at the movie theaters, a giant cardboard thing is of Denzel, like looking around, like the side of
yeah.
his face, looking around. Not of Mescal or Pascal or Connie or the Emperor. It's Denzel. This is Denzel's movie. I'm sorry. It is.
Can I rewrite the movie a little bit, or at least say what I would have liked? And obviously, anytime you do this, you're doing it with hindsight and having seen what didn't work, right? But man, I kind of thought, again, I think like at some point, Pedro Pascal's character was like the villain, and then he was like a sympathetic villain, and then he was kind of he was almost a co-protagonist at a second before right before he's killed, right?
Right, right.
And I was like, that was part of like the many movies that I found in this mo one movie was like, I really felt like it either should have been Lucius's story or Acacius's story, but I probably would have, and this is no slight on Paul Mescal, like, but I probably would have been really interested in just having seen Acacius, like Pedro Pascal have to face off against Denzel. And that would have been Gladiator. Like he was also connected to Maximus. Like he was like, he says it at one point. Like he fought under Maximus. You get the sense that Maximus meant something to him. He probably
Right.
was like a, he was probably like a subordinate officer or something like that. You could have
Yeah.
easily, that could have been Gladiator too.
Well, that carries so much more weight for the movie because of his position, rather than it being another like captured slave story, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, like when we find out that his character is Russell Crowe's previous character's son, in the movie watching it, that just didn't really sing to me. It was like, okay, this is where we
Yeah.
are. Not that I was like down on it, it just wasn't like, you know, it wasn't that moment. It was like, oh, why is that important? You know? And also it's kind of like Star Warsy, where it was like, oh, what was it? Return of the Jedi, is that the last one in the first trilogy?
Yeah.
Return of the Jedi, The Force Awakens. It's like, yeah, the Empire, they're back up. The bad guys somehow in the last 20 years took
Right.
power again, and here we are doing the same thing we just did. It's like, it's got to be some progression, you
Yeah,
know?
ultimately, I think that's one of the reasons why I found the movie entertaining but not enjoyable necessarily, was that it was just Gladiator again.
It like literally was Gladiator 2 in that sense.
It really was. It was absolutely Gladiator 2. Many of the same plot points, many of the same beats, just kind of more confusing and less like less through line. You know what I mean? And that was that kept it from being like really even like guilty pleasure fun, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
But
because
again,
none of the
that's
plot lines were clear early. You didn't really know what was happening, and then it changed. Like you said, it changed a few times, and it's like, what was he really fighting for? His own freedom? And then it was like, no, he's rage and revenge. And it was just like, I don't know. It didn't, you know, it was a decent time out at the movies, you know, but also could have been a time at the house.
it definitely, it definitely could have been the time at the
Also
house.
could have been a time.
I
But
would say,
you know, if Denzel wasn't the lead, would I even have tried to see it, right?
honestly, I probably wouldn't like,
You
and
know?
I loved that first movie. We talked about it last time, but yeah, it just didn't have that pull. But the Denzel of it all kind of made me a little bit more interested.
Yeah. I mean, he's worth apparently 122 million dollars. That was just the box office minus the budget. But it
Yeah.
made 372 million, so maybe he's worth $372 million. Like, or at least half of that, if you know, whoever percentage would have just seen any Gladiator 2 minus that, is like what Denzel is worth. So it's at least a few hundred million dollars.
Right. At least. I also think like I'm sorry, like I just thought about this too, like also, this movie kind of has like a Dances with Wolves sort of thing that plays out before the movie begins, with like Lucius having escaped to North Africa and somehow becoming one of the best of the North Africans at the beginning of the movie, to
Yeah.
the point where he has a North African name, Hanno, and all these things, you know what I mean? And it's like, but then it's I don't know. It's a little bit of a Dances with Wolves sort of thing, or Last of the Mohicans sort of thing that we, that's not a movie we saw, but it was another movie that was in this movie.
Well, the writer wrote The Man in the High Castle, which is an alternate history
I really
TV
like
show.
that show. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
So
is alternate history.
that kind of gives like a, I don't know, a grounding for where this movie came from, you know. He also wrote this great movie, The Last Castle. He co-wrote this movie from 2001, which is very much about it's about a prison rebellion, basically.
Oh, I remember that. Like
You know,
Redford, right?
Robert Redford and James Gandolfini's in it. Delroy Lindo, my man, Delroy. They should
Yeah,
have put
Delroy.
Delroy Lindo in this movie somewhere, just anywhere. Why not?
Del
Or
and
Delroy.
Delroy's British. Get him in there.
Yes. Yeah.
He's got
He should have been in
the accent.
there. He should have been in there. Yeah, David Scarpa is the writer.
Okay.
Trying to think if I have any other thoughts about this movie, really, like relevant thoughts. But nothing's coming to mind. I feel like covered most of my things. We talked about the emperors being, very like coded. Talk about a white movie and like white cultural points of view, Yeah, you got anything else? Anything else come to mind for you with this movie? We'll probably think of something like in 2 hours. Text each
Of
other.
course, right, always. No, I one thing I enjoyed, there's a scene where Lucius fights some other gladiator in a hand-to-hand brawl. And I really liked that scene because it was something that felt historically accurate in the sense that they weren't like sitting there and boxing and throwing punches, they were grappling, and that definitely would have like hand-to-hand combat grappling would have been just as major a sport in the Roman world as anything else, whether they were gladiators or
I
anything.
mean,
So,
we even still call it Roman wrestling, right?
right, Greco-Roman wrestling, like literally, right? That was a huge thing. So they had their own kind of MMA. It was called Pancration, which literally means all in, anything goes. You know what I mean? So that would actually been something that you would have probably seen in a lot of places, and I thought that they handled that well. It looked good, and it felt real. The last thought I had was, and again, not to continue to bag on this movie, perfectly entertaining, but movies like this do make me a little sad that real history and real narratives from history aren't often engaged more seriously in film. I think some of the interesting stories and limitations of those stories really could provide some interesting space for storytelling. And so, I definitely think you've always got to have some license for adaptation. But I would just encourage anybody, especially who's writing, who's a writer who listens to this or whatever, like get deep in the history and try to use some of those guardrails or guidelines as to like stretch your story, because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll ever really get to a point where, somebody tells a historical story, whatever period, whatever person, that adheres closer to what really happened. Because history is full of twists and turns, and is often what happened is something you couldn't make up, So it's interesting that we often end up making up so many things. And like storytelling in America has become so calculated and repetitious in the sense of, or even just like so narrowly focused on like the hero's journey. Like that's one of the most damaging, I think, concepts to permeate storytelling.
It's
And
been
so
so overused.
when you have to follow the hero's journey all the time, and this is what like executives know, this is what the agents know, this is what the decision makers know, and if you try to deviate from it, it's they're like, well, what is this? We want the protagonist to be more active, we want them to have start struggling, and there's got to be a love interest, and all these things kind of have to fit in a certain way, and then you don't get a chance to explore how truly twisted human history is. It is like a mess. It is such a mess and so diabolical, but also great stories of triumph, and everything that we want in movies does exist in history. Sometimes the complication is history, real history is too dense. It's too many things happening, too many people to account for, but sometimes so many liberties are taken in a movie that it's like, but at the same time, I would say we shouldn't go into any movie expecting it to get an education necessarily.
For sure.
So I'm not saying that they should be more educational about history. I just think that the stories of actual history are often as entertaining as what screenwriters like myself or who could come up with, you know, and we could still lean into the entertainment aspect of them and have them not have to follow the prescribed notions of some screenwriting textbook, you know.
Yeah, that makes me think, right? Like when I first saw Gladiator 2, right? And I saw Denzel was going to be a part of it, right? I thought he was going to play the person who would have been the actual emperor in 200 AD, Septimius Severus, Gaeta and Caracalla's father. And, you know, I think. When I think of like ways that a writer might have adhered closer to actual history, setting that in 200 AD, making that Septimius Severus the emperor, getting someone like Denzel to play that character, right? Maybe, an evil emperor or a dictator or something, but like a person of power, not somebody scheming behind the scenes with this tragic backstory. Like so much of that change ultimately happen to reinforce current cultural narratives. And I think sometimes if we can try our best to stay within the cultural narratives of the time, we actually can get to more interesting stories.
It says here, during his reign, Macrinus brought actions, his diplomatic actions brought peace with each of the individual kingdoms, but some of the additional monetary costs generated unrest in the Roman military. It also said he was the first emperor who never visited Rome during his reign. That's interesting.
There's a great, you know, Denzel wears an earring in this movie, and there's a great piece of Roman history that still survives to this day that describes Emperor Macrinus, and he was from North Africa as well, from I think out in the mountains, right? He was from the tribes, right? Like the Berber tribes of the area, and it was stated as like a strange thing that he had an earring, right? And so I did think that was another cool little way that Denzel brought a bit of that character into this more fictionalized version. I would also say, you know, for anybody definitely who has interest in this time period, I mean, learning more about Caracalla and Gaeta and their father, Septimius Severus. Macrinus did overthrow Caracalla, but then his family from the Syrian side, from the Arab side, because they were so important, they basically came in and said, no, the empire's ours, and they took it back.
Yeah, he
So
was only
those
the
people.
emperor for like a year,
Yeah, he
a
was only the
calendar year
emperor
at the
for a year.
time, which is not the same as a year now, but yeah.
Basically, Caracalla's aunt and cousins were like, no, this belongs to us. And they came back hard. But I would argue like learning about that time period is really interesting. It's probably I think it's one of the clearest times where you can look back at that time period and see a lot of reflections to like what our modern life is, with how interconnected that empire was with one another. People traveled and moved all the time, and there was a lot of different ways of communicating across space and distance. So it's probably a very good picture of the modern world, or of the modern world within the ancient world, and vice versa.
Yeah. You know, it's
Also,
actually just go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, also one thing, last thing about Caracalla, not here to stand him. He definitely did some terrible things in his life, but he also was the emperor who passed the law that made everyone who was lived in the empire a citizen of Rome. He was the first emperor to give everyone full Roman citizenship. And it strikes me that oftentimes these kind of older historians talk about, oh, he just did that because he wanted taxes or money, or he was this military dictator, blah, blah, blah. But it also strikes me as being the son of two people who were from the provinces and likely sometimes treated as if they were less than because they were from the provinces, would be the first emperor to say, no, everybody who lives under the empire is a citizen. I just think that's interesting, and it's not something that's often considered when people talk about the reason why he did that.
Definitely interesting. Doing a historical movie, just to kind of wrap that whole thought process up, because we can all kind of have our opinions and we want to know the real history. And I always say, like, a movie is just entertainment. And like you
Absolutely.
said, if you want to know the real, you got to pick up a book. You got to pick up a book. You got to do get on the internet, pick up a book. Because it is interesting. Like, Macrinus did overthrow Caracalla and had him murdered. And that's what happened in the movie. So if you like know that much of the story, maybe you do write something kind of like the movie we saw, you know? Of course, that's not what this movie is. This movie is Gladiator 2, not the story of Marcinus. But using the gladiator battles as a tool, part of his political maneuverings. You can understand that and the appeal of that, you know. I don't know if sports are quite at that level now, but definitely, like, I mean, if you win a title, you go see the president, you know. Like, you know, if the president shows up at a game or he does his Final Four picks or he's at the Super Bowl or something, like, they cover that. That's covered in the news. So, you know, in the same way, if the president was like, I think Ohio State's going to beat Tennessee, people in either one of those states might change. You know what I mean? The governor of either one of those states might be like, well, Mr. President, you know, and it's like
The people of the great state of Minnesota. Yeah, that sort of
a jousting back and forth, you know? So it's a fine line.
It definitely is.
They want to make a movie. They want to make an entertaining movie. This is a $250 movie, you know? $250 million movie. Like, a lot of decisions have to be made by a lot of people to get something that. And then they were like, well, it shouldn't be Denzel because it's, you know, North African. And that's kind of, well, but you got to get Denzel. You know what I mean? It's not like you can just get any you can't do historical movies based on how people look, really. If there's nobody that looks like that person, that's an A-list actor. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. I absolutely agree. And I think what's really interesting is like the I'm not from North Africa. I don't want to speak to it, but as somebody who is like just even very interested in the culture and the history of that region, you do see, like, even just in photography of the region, that there are a lot of different types of people in that region, right? Like, North
And if,
Africa has long been one of the crossroads of human
right, I
movement.
was gonna say, in that period of time, it was probably even more people like mixing and matching, people were all kind of different things. They weren't the same political lines and also wasn't the same ability to travel. If you were somewhere for 2 weeks, you might have jumped into something, you know, colloquially saying, like, and then produced a kid, like, hey, we've been
Honestly,
here for 3 months. It takes a long time to travel by foot. Like, we, you know, either taking things by force or meeting people in different, you know, in the market, whatever, whatever, you know, life just intermingles. So, and we're trying to interpret these things now, putting it through an American lens. This is a business. I don't know. I don't know. That's why I kind of like, I feel like the two sides is I can want at one hand to see things more historically accurate and appreciate the entertainment of something that isn't, and do the legwork if I'm really curious. Even something like asking you questions is like something I can do. And other people have other outlets, and I can get on Wikipedia to start. And if I like, if that hooks me, I can go to YouTube and type in some names. And if that hooks me, I can go to BarnesandNoble.com and find a book, or the library and find a book, you know, like just keep getting to more and more, I guess, trusted sources, trusted and extensive sources, you know, to getting a better picture of what the reality was. Or I can just be like, I enjoyed that movie. But as long as I don't be like, if I don't spend time in real life telling people what happened in the movie was a reality and using that to like make points or make a policy if I was in that kind of position
That
because
happens,
of what
yeah.
happened in the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that definitely happens, right? I was recently listening to something about the history of the KKK, right? And I know this is a big switch, but it's like we all kind of know now if we've seen a Black Klansman, like the KKK that existed in the 20th century was not the same thing as the original KKK. It was based on and influenced the interpretation in that movie, Birth of a
Birth
Nation.
of a Nation, yeah.
So, like, absolutely, like, people will take a fake, that's an extreme example, but take a fake interpretation, a visual romanticization of history, and absolutely, like, be like, yeah, that's history. That happens. And similar things happen today. You see people arguing about some movie that was from 10 years ago, like, it really, like, it's an accurate representation of something that really happened. And it's like, no, that's a movie.
Right. We have to,
And Affleck actually wasn't part of the Iran, like
right.
the American Iran hostage situation,
Yeah. So we have to, the responsibility doesn't always fall on the institution. Sometimes it falls on us as people to just be like, yeah, this was a movie.
Yeah. Be
And even if
curious.
you don't know that this or that character was real or not, right? You don't have to take it. You have to just know that it's a movie and that some things or characters may be made up and it may be the main character. And we don't have to also spend time, like, you know, the actors go to these interviews and press tour and they're like, have to answer to the historical accuracy of a movie. Why are we making actors do that? Actors, especially. I mean, if you want to interview the executives that greenlit the movie, the writer that made decisions, or the director that made decisions, those are the people to ask about the historical accuracy. The actors got a script. They got a script and was like, can you do this? The actors actually don't need to know the historical truths to play their part in the movie well, in most historical movies.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
You know, maybe if it's a musical biopic, they need to know the song. Maybe it's helpful if they know the song or see the performance, but Ancient Rome, they don't need to know. Denzel doesn't need to know. They don't need to know
Absolutely.
any of this. They're being directed. They're being guided by people who made the decisions of what to what would be real or what wasn't. They didn't make any decisions. But we're sitting there asking them like, oh, Denzel, oh, your character was North African. He probably wasn't. And Denzel's like, Denzel should have been like, oh, was he? I don't even know. I got a script. I didn't make any of those decisions. I made a decision to play the part that was handed to me in the script. I didn't do this. He doesn't need to. Pedro Pascal, Connie Nielsen, Paul Mescal, like none of them needed to do it. They needed to do it. They could have done it for their own research, maybe to dig deeper into the character to know about the time period. But they didn't make any of the story decisions. The writer did. The executives told the writer what they wanted or didn't like. The director, who Ridley Scott was definitely part of this from the beginning, said, this doesn't matter. This is important. This is the story I want to tell. But even then, to get too deep into questioning them is actually kind of, to me, ignorant on our part or the media's part or whoever's asking these questions or who act like we care enough. And if you care and you know the history, write your blog or make your podcast or do your thing about that and tell the real history instead of, you know, I guess we did a fair amount of like criticizing in this, but I felt like that's not why we didn't think the movie was great.
No, I have only filmic story problems with this movie.
Right? It's like
The historical accuracy is something that I would have to process on my own.
Yeah, like the plot, it was like the plot, the pacing. who was the villain? Who were we even following at times? Like, and I didn't even know the history before the podcast. And I was like, yeah, it was entertaining, but I didn't love the movie, you know? So.
Right. Exactly. No, it's the film issues that hold this movie back, right?
Right.
Not stuff. I think
And
last
like,
thing out. Oh yeah, no.
let me do this and then you do the last thing. Like, looking at Troy, which was a movie that got a lot of criticism at the time, I remember. And it kind of people kind of like make fun of it, but Troy was a very entertaining movie that I also liked at the time. And it was more of a blockbuster than like a prestige movie, I felt like.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's a summer blockbuster. It's an action
And the
movie.
st and the story, like, is it real or is it not? Well, we know parts of it are part of a mythology, the Trojan
Right.
horse, you know what I mean? And Achilles, the Helen of Troy, like these things are, there's a working knowledge of them in the general zeitgeist.
Right.
And that's what Troy was. It was putting together the zeitgeist of these things into a clear narrative.
Right. And I think Troy is a really interesting example because when people like got like, yeah, it's not historically accurate, it's like, well, the Trojan War happened back so long ago in time that by the time we actually get the earliest writings about it, it's already a fictional
It's
mythologized.
already, yeah, it's already.
It did happen. We know it
Yeah.
happened. The city of Troy existed. We've literally excavated down to that layer of time, and we see that there was mu a lot of warfare during that time. We know something happened, but by the time we heard about it for the first time, it was already fake.
Yeah. That's funny with so much history. 'Cause people, oh, you literacy is still relatively new, like general
Still,
literacy. And
yeah.
even though there's like encouragement for literacy and things, a lot of people still can't read. And we actually seem to be going backwards in
Right.
literacy rates now. So I think that's also like important for people to remember about history is like people can't read and people couldn't write until well after BC. So.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most interesting things about, that I've been thinking about from a history standpoint over the past couple of years is like the fact of the matter is like in the ancient Roman world, like a majority of people would never. They couldn't read, they couldn't write, and they didn't have any reason to. It is absolutely possible to live a successful life, even to become fabulously wealthy without necessarily knowing how to read or write. There have been plenty of non-literate societies throughout human time. And
Yeah.
it is interesting how we like judge ancient societies or the past on its level of literacy. And it's like, that's a skill we developed because we invented the technology of writing. Like it, the technology adapted our behavior. You don't actually
Right.
need it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
Right. That's fascinating. And maybe in a topic for another, a whole nother podcast. Did you have one more point? Do you remember that you wanted to get into?
oh yeah, I was just gonna say, I don't think this will ever happen as like a film, but I do as like the history nerd and the person who is always more interested in the social history of the people at the time, the average people at the time. That's always what's more fascinating to me than like kings and queens and generals and things like that. So one day I'd love to see this genre exist where it's like regular stories about regular people, but set in a historical period, like a romance story of two regular people, but in a historical period, or the
I mean, that
father who's
definitely,
lost his job and has to like
that
you know what
definitely
I mean?
exists. It's just like, yeah, hard to find. It's just like under the radar, or it's like. I met a lot of these writers that do historical fiction of like Civil War era, kind of post Civil War era historical fiction. And they're writing about regular people in those times. But I think it's very, just still very niche.
Yeah,
And
it's funny. I think
I think,
I have an
yeah.
argument about it that I think it's like basically up until like 1850. I think anything said after 1850, people are willing to do like regular people stories.
Sure,
But like
sure. That's
But
like the
like
modern
anything
era. Yeah.
that, it's like it's got to be epic, you know. It's got to be war. It's got to be
Yeah.
battle. It's got to be, you know,
Well, that would
kings and.
be interesting if somebody could conjure up like a $3 million indie
Yeah,
type of
like an
movie
indie cheap.
set during the reign of Alexander or something, right? That would be like quite a
I would
feat.
find it super interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna wrap it up. We did a lot of time and Gladiator 2.
Appreciate the conversation, man.